Afternoon General Sessions is back in session. Did everyone enjoy the breakouts? Did you enjoy iPads and iPhones with Athir? Did you enjoy dancing with Patty Chang and Teresa Fabre? All right. So glad to hear it. So, more logistical things. Please remember our COVID protocols. Mask unless you are actively eating or drinking. Please mask unless you are actively eating or drinking. While we were, after we adjourned after the student luncheon, a pair of sunglasses were found. If somebody is missing a pair of sunglasses, please come let me know. I might have your sunglasses up here. Or if you know someone who said they lost a pair of sunglasses, let them know to let me know. Students, how are we doing, or how are you doing on Pi-Palooza?
530.
Ooh, 530. So who's getting a pie? So that's Sarah Luna? Ellen Bartelt?
Yes.
Debbie Stein?
Yes.
Woo. We need $70 more to get today's up high. $70 more to get today's up high in the face. And then another, what is it, $270 to get Rousey a pie. Rousey, are you here? All right. And then up to $1,000, then Adelmo gets a pie. I think Adelmo will forgive you if he doesn't get a pie, though. All right. So we will start with our afternoon sessions. The wonderful Martin Wild is here. If you've ever been to any audio describe performances in the Chicagoland area, Martin has probably been the describer. I have had the pleasure of hearing him do descriptions for many plays at Broadway and Chicago and operas at Lyric Opera. So Martin Wild, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. Hey, everybody. Well, first, I'd like to thank Marilyn for the opportunity to speak with you today. Marilyn's a frequent consumer and strong supporter of audio description. Yeah. So I've described many live shows that Marilyn has attended, as she said, so the simple fact that I'm here today must mean one of two things. Either audio description enriches her life and is something she wants to share with her community, or it's an opportunity to take a break from the other heady sessions that you all are and just have a little fun. Or maybe it's both. The next 15 minutes will tell. So by way of introduction, as you heard, my name is Martin Wild. 10 years ago, I was on a flight to Minneapolis when I found myself seated next to an angel holding a white cane who would change the course of my life forever. She talked about how accessibility services such as audio description allowed her to engage and participate in her life more fully. I recalled being a kid describing baseball games and other events for my low vision father and what a difference that made for him. After that flight, I immediately sought out as much training as I could and became a professional audio describer. So over the past decades, I have provided audio description for over 200 live performing art shows and events, including over 50 operas. I wrote, voiced, and produced audio description for hundreds of hours of TV shows, PSAs, and feature films. I've described over 20 national parks. And in 2020, I virtually described the Democratic National Convention, and in 2021, the presidential inauguration. I've also written a pair of apps called Access Live that helps make it easy to both provide and consume live audio description and assistive listening by streaming high-quality audio in real time over Wi-Fi to a person's own phone or mobile device. When I get enough funding to make that a reality, I'll let you all know. So back to the topic at hand, Broadway. Since the pandemic, in Broadway in Chicago, I've described Frozen, Paradise Square, The Simon and Garfunkel Story, Jersey Boys, Moulin Rouge, Fiddler on the Roof, Ain't Too Proud, Six, My Fair Lady, Jesus Christ Superstar, Devil Wears Prada, and coming up in the next month, Wicked and The Lion King.
Oh, yeah.
Woo! So call the theater. Let them know you want to get in on that. So at this point, though, I'd like to take a few moments to tell you what goes into the work of audio description. So audio description is the process and practice of translating visual information into a descriptive text. I say both a process and a practice because while a basic set of best practices for audio description exists, there's no one way to do it. And in that way, it's more of an art than a science. So to understand the process piece, no matter what I'm describing, my job is to observe the visual content, analyze the content to prioritize the most important elements, then succinctly and vividly verbalize those elements, and all with the goal of enhancing the listener's understanding and experience of the content. So, in media and live performance practice, audio description has to fit into the pauses between the spoken or sung dialogue and any important sound effects. A list of some of those visual elements includes character descriptions, settings and scene changes, actions, facial expressions, physical characteristics such as body language and gestures, visual comedy and sight gags, costumes and clothing, multimedia effects and lighting, and text or on-screen graphics, including titles, credits, and subtitled translations of a foreign language. In museum, gallery, or tour practice, the description has to strike a balance between the overall length of the description and the needs of the intended audiences. Things to be described include artifacts, images and text, physical interactives, digital interactives such as touchscreens, tablet displays, or kiosks, navigation and area descriptions. Where am I? How do I get to the front doors? Where are the bathrooms? Where are the elevators? Tactile displays such as models and maps, videos and embedded in the exhibits, and instructions for using tour players and other apps that are required for accessing the audio description. So the primary intended audience, no surprise, for audio description are individuals who are blind or have low vision. In my opinion, it expands inclusivity and enables folks to understand and experience important visual information independently, with the goal of providing access that is on par with their sighted peers. But audio description also benefits individuals who are deafblind or who have other sensory disabilities, people who have cognitive or intellectual disabilities, those who are auditory learners or second language learners, individuals with attention deficit disorder, and those who may wish to listen to the description while using their vision to perform another task. So, moving now from the theoretical to the experiential, I'm going to try and give you a taste of what audio description is all about. I'm going to play an audio clip of a movie as it was originally produced. Can we get the audio for the... Okay, let's see, make sure I've got my settings appropriate. It did work in rehearsal, so that's always the case. Here we go.
Speculation is running high among Yankee followers as to the possibility of trading away the great right-hander, Hank Moonjean, for three unknown young players and an undetermined amount of cash. Moonjean has racked up 10 wins against only 3 losses so far this year, which is, incidentally, high for both leagues. It looks to this reporter that the Yankee office will be bombarded by many protests.
Stop there. So, now, those of you who may not have guessed it, that was a clip from the 1968 movie version of The Odd Couple. What? You didn't get that? The movie was based on Neil Simon's 1965 play, the same name. So, when I describe a play or a Broadway show, I prepare a set of pre-show notes that I read before the performance begins. This affords me the time to describe the sets, costumes, and characters that I do not have time to describe during the show. And all that information allows patrons the opportunity to construct an image of what they're about to experience in their own mind's eye. So now I'm going to set the stage for this clip, if you will, through a set of pre-show notes. Our characters, Felix and Oscar, are two middle-aged white men who are currently sharing Oscar's New York apartment. Felix has neatly trimmed short dark hair and wears a long-sleeve ironed white shirt and a gray silk tie, slightly undone at the neck, that matches his gray trousers. Oscar has a mop of dark hair with long, unkempt bangs. He wears a long-sleeve wrinkled white shirt and black pants. In Oscar's apartment, the dining room is in the areas in the foreground and opens out to a larger living room area in the background. In the dining room, several wooden chairs surround a round wooden poker table with a wooden sideboy along the far wall. In the living room, several green stuffed side chairs are placed next to a long beige couch with a number of matching throw pillows, all facing a TV on a rolling stand at the right. From the dining room, a short, narrow hallway leads to a small kitchen with a gray and white checked linoleum floor, an avocado refrigerator, and a double bowl white enamel sink. Now, the same clip with audio description.
Well, speculation is running high among Yankee followers as to the possibility of trading away the great right-hander, Hank Moonjean, for three unknown young players and an undetermined amount of cash. Moonjean has racked up 10 wins against only 3 losses so far this year, which is, incidentally, high for both leagues. It looks to this reporter that the Yankee office will be bombarded by many protests.
He sits at the table, places a cloth napkin on his lap, and sprinkles some cheese on his pasta. Oscar sits up, and then stands and strides across the room to the dining room, grabbing a can of air freshener from the side. He sprays the air over and around the table. Felix approaches. As Felix takes a bite, Oscar sprays the air at the side of Oscar to Felix's face. Oscar slams the can down and slumps into a chair, facing away from him. Felix leans back at the table, squinting, and dabs his eyes at his face with his napkin, holds it.
All right, how long is this going to go on?
You talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
What do you want to know?
I just want to know if you're going to spend the rest of your life not talking to me. And if you are, I'm going to get a radio.
You had your chance to talk last night. I beg you to come upstairs with me. Here, here's a key to the back door. Now, you stick to the hallway in your room and you won't get hurt.
Meaning what?
Meaning that if you want to live here, I don't want to see you, I don't want to hear you, I don't want to smell you cooking, all right? Now, kindly remove that spaghetti from my poker table. The hell is so funny?
It's not spaghetti, it's linguine.
He chuckles in his chair. Oscar picks up the plate, takes a few steps from the hall, and flings the plate at the kitchen wall. Oscar spins back around, his hair mussed, eyes narrow.
Now it's garbage.
That's the end of the clip. So I hope you got a little bit more out of that clip the second time around than the first. So, what is the state of audio description availability today? On a positive note, thanks to the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act, more and more hours of audio description are required to be offered on broadcasts and streaming services. One positive outcome of the pandemic I've seen is that media companies are putting more emphasis on accessibility across the board, from their websites to their content. And most of the major movie chains also provide audio description headsets at their theaters, though I'm also aware of a ton of problems with these devices and employee education in that arena. But when it comes to accessing audio description of any kind at live events, I'm sorry to say the current outlook is not so good. Here in the Chicagoland area, there are a lot of cultural and entertainment venues and show producers that offer audio description, but mostly at specific performances or only on demand. And I'll get back to that in a minute. Mind's Eye is another organization in downstate Illinois/St. Louis area that provides a lot of audio description for everything from museum tours to baseball and hockey games. But once again, while some of those venues and organizations contact Mind's Eye to provide the service, most of the description they provide originates from a patron's request. So, what are the ways live audio description can be expanded? I think the answer to that question is actually a blueprint for how to make accessibility in general work. Of course, venues have to make accessibility services available, but if they don't tell anybody about them, no one's going to show up. And in my opinion, they have to consciously develop their accessibility audience with the same commitment they cultivate any other demographic they're looking to bring in and want to come in. But the other side of the coin is the audience. If you'd like to have audio description for a show, ask for it. If you know of an event that is being described, make an effort to attend that event. Or if you can't make it yourself, tell somebody else who might be interested. And if you'd like the description at an event, tell the venue, and then tell your friends and family about it and encourage them to check it out. I'm not so naive as to think this will happen overnight, and that venues will just magically roll over and provide these services, or that it won't happen without plenty of figurative wailing and gnashing of teeth. After all, we're pretty close to Halloween. But as Mind's Eye, and I'm sure many people in this room have experienced, venues won't provide audio description if you don't ask for it. And from what I can tell, y'all know a thing or two about advocacy. Woo! Finally, I wanted to tell you about some professional development efforts. I'm the co-chair of the Audio Description and Subject Matter Expert Committee of the Academy for Certification of Vision Rehabilitation and Education Professionals, ACVREP. That's a mouthful. But over the past 3 years, we have been working to establish a certification process for audio describers. The certification will formally recognize individuals who demonstrate knowledge of and proficiency in audio description best practices across a wide range of formats and venues. Our goal is to increase the quality and quantity of trained audio describers and thereby increase the availability of audio description everywhere. And with that, I thank you very much for your time and attention and hope to see you soon at an audio describe performance, perhaps near you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Martin. If someone from the floor would like to ask just one question, we can take one question. Okay, I heard Kennedy, and then there was one over by the door prize table. Okay, so I'll do two because it's the guacamole queen and it's Jen Ken. So if someone could run Jennifer Kennedy a mic. Thank you, Glenn, and then over to Teresa.
He turns the mic on and hands it to the patron.
Martin, thank you very, very much. I am a theater nerd. Anybody who knows me knows that. If you didn't know that, now you do. And I was thrilled when I moved to this part of the country and saw the lineup that Chicago has because I used to live 5 hours from New York City. My question is, where do we find all of the things that you're describing? It's really hard to find good describers. They're doing a better job of it in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a woman that I used to follow in Denver who had a website that listed what performances she was doing. Do you have that? And if you don't, what can we do to encourage you to do that? Because I would plan my weekends around that, I assure you.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for the question. The audio description landscape in Chicago, there are a handful of providers, myself included. I have a website that I post all of the shows I've done. I have not placed the shows I will be doing in the future. So that is something that I will take under advisement, and we'll start to put that up there. So my website is wildmouth.com, wildemouth.com/audio-description. So that should be fairly easy to find. Now I have to make that more accessible. So I need to do more of that, and now is a good time to do that. But yes, I describe all of the operas for Lyric in Chicago. I do the majority of Broadway in Chicago performances, and those you do need to call the Broadway in Chicago box office to request the service, but they will do that. They will then contact me or any of their other describers if I can't do it to see if they can make that happen for the performance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
They say you have a mic, so your question.
So, excellent question. One of the things we really hope to stimulate by creating this certification is a number of other educational opportunities for people to take advantage of. So, in community colleges, other training resources, and then actual programs in colleges and universities. Those do not exist currently, so there will be a period of time once the certification is released, which we hope will be in the next year, maybe two. We've been at it for three. It seems like forever already. But once the certification is available, it constitutes an exam, and we're trying to make the exam as accessible as possible as well. We just had an open forum last week where the committee asked for input from blind and low vision audio description writers, how they achieve, what process they use to go through their writing of audio description. So we're trying to tackle a number of issues all at once, but once the certification is available, no, you will not have to go to grad school. You will not have to go to an undergraduate four-year college to have this happen. There will be training courses, and we hope to stimulate more of that as the certification becomes available. And there will be, you know, a period of time for people who have been working in audio description to bone up on their skills to be able to take the exam and become certified. But then thereafter, we hope the educational programs will kick in and then provide that steady stream of audio describers going forward.
Thank you. Thank you for those great questions. I think the downtown lady should give a door prize for this wonderful Broadway presentation. Do we have a door prize?
Okay. So for this door prize, we have a $15 gift card for Subway, donated by Dave Mayer and Teresa. And we have a burgundy scarf, which was handmade by Gina Provo.
And Sarah Luna, Dilip Shah, Denise Avant, make your way up to the front, please.
We also need Ms. Teresa.
Yes.
Pam Gilmore.
Pam G. Is Pam in the room? Oh, okay. Didn't hear you. All right, and today, so make your way up to the front table as well for the next session, for the next presentation. Yep, they're down that way, Teresa. Yep, keep going.
Ma'am?
Yes?
Can I give away one more?
Of course you can.
Okay. I've got...
As long as it's for me.
Well, we'll see about that. I've got a cute little... donation from Chicago Chapter. So, here we go.
Yep. Oh, go to my other side. Go to the other side.
Oh, boy. If I can pronounce it.
D-I-L-I-P. Oh, he's on the panel. Dilip, you just won a door prize. Dilip, you won a door prize.
Oh, I did?
Yes. Yep, he's on the next panel. So he is here.
All right.
Thank you. Is the panel ready?
Yes, we are, Madam President.
All right. So as you all know,
remove this mask. Okay.
Diversity and inclusion is important within our organization. So at this convention, our D&I committee has come up with a panel. So Denise Avant, take it away.
All right. Thank you, Madam President. First of all, I would like us, this has been a great convention and will continue to be, so I would like us to give it up for our president, Marilyn Green. So, as you heard Madam President say, diversity, equity, and inclusion is one of the core values of the National Federation of the Blind, and also of its Illinois affiliate. And so we seek to celebrate diversity, understand people from diverse backgrounds. And so in order to do that, we try to put on panels and discussions at our convention. So the topic that we have here with us this afternoon is called Personal Reflections, Celebrating Family History Month. And so we have, I'm going to be the moderator, and on the panel we have Sarah Luna, who is the co-chair with me of the Illinois Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. Give her a hand, come on. Well, we all want to do that. We have Teresa Fabre, who is the secretary of the Illinois Association of Blind Students. And we have Dilip Shah, who is one of our new members. So, and he just won a door prize. So, first of all, let me thank all three of our panelists for agreeing to share with us this afternoon. We really do appreciate it. What I am going to ask them to do, I have a series of questions. But first, the first question that I have for each one of them, because I'm going to let them kind of tell you who they are. So let's begin with Sarah Luna. If you could introduce yourself and give us some information, including what identities you hold. I'm sorry. I didn't know Sarah doesn't have a microphone. Do we have an extra mic?
Hello, everyone.
There you go.
Miss me yet? All right, so I'm Sarah Luna. I am Mexican-American and African-American. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I am a cisgendered heterosexual female. Glad to be here once again talking with all of you.
Okay, we will move the microphone. Let's see, is Teresa?
Okay, so I don't have the fancy words that Sarah has, but my pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm a Mexican woman. My first language is Spanish, but then I also have some French genes on my dad's side, and I'm heterosexual. I think that's what I can say.
Okay, and Dilip.
Hi, my name is Dilip, just like Philip, but with a D instead. I am from India, and I'm wearing a dark blazer, have brown skin, black hair, maybe with some gray sprinkles. And my pronouns are he, him, I guess his. Thank you.
Okay. So the next question I have for our panel is how did the manner in which you were raised affect your relationship with your cultural background? Sarah, we'll go to you first.
All right, so when I thought about this question, I really thought back to my childhood. And so I grew up in Chicago in what is a quintessential Mexican neighborhood named Pilsen. And because I was raised in a Mexican neighborhood, I was able to forge really strong connections to my Mexican heritage. That is the side of my family that I saw the most often for like holidays and just like fun weekend get-togethers. We observed, like, we would go to like Mexican Independence Day parades, and we would have all the Mexican dishes on the holidays. And I've been fortunate enough to have visited Mexico on a number of occasions. So because of all of this, like, I had a really strong connection to my Mexican heritage. But in contrast, I never really felt like I had the opportunity to connect to my African American roots. And I kind of felt like an underlying guilt for like a number of years, in that like I never really felt like I connected to Black culture in a lot of ways. Like, I didn't particularly identify with like a lot of the music genres that African Americans traditionally excel in, with like rap, hip hop, R&B, jazz, soul. Like, I just never connected with genres like that, and a lot of other like pop culture things that I kind of felt guilty for. Like, I felt like I wasn't Black enough for like a large part of my childhood, because I just didn't feel like I had those opportunities to really connect with that side of my, with my background.
Okay, Teresa?
So I was born and raised in Mexico. I lived there for 25 years in a big family. My family is very, very Catholic. My parents go to church like every day. So that influenced a lot my childhood and adolescence. Like Sarah was saying, like in the northern part of Mexico, it's a little bit different than on central Mexico, where I feel like Mexicans who live in the center and south of the country have a lot of culture and traditions. And we in the north, we want to be Americans, honestly. So people are trying to behave and even speak in English sometimes, like in Mexico, in the northern part of it. So I felt, like Sarah was saying, like my connection to my Mexican roots was kind of not completely there, because people in the center and the south like to hear other kind of music that I don't really like, or I didn't really like. Now I can hear it and it's fine, some of it. But yeah, it's been interesting, definitely, even like when I was living there, that I couldn't like identify a lot with some of the traditions, because the culture in Mexico is different in different parts of the country. So I sometimes felt like a fake Mexican, you know? So, and then I moved to the US, and now here is where I'm like a very proud Mexican. And whenever I have the chance, I will say like I'm Mexican. So that's about me.
Okay, Dylan?
So, after I was born, 28 days later, a big event happened in the history of India. India gained independence from a 200-year British rule, and that changed everything. Suddenly, there was people power, and people wanted laws enacted that will help everybody. And one of the laws that got enacted was to get rid of those people who had like thousands of acres and would hire people, you know, kind of like sharecroppers, and then exploit them tremendously. So the law was enacted that said, from now on, whoever tills, it's his land and doesn't belong to a big landlord. My father had just a few dozen acres of land. He was not a big landlord, but he got caught up in this. And, you know, it was for the good probably. So suddenly he lost all the land, and overnight we became from a fairly rich family to a dirt poor family. We had a large family, and we didn't know what to do. So my father's attitude always was everything that happens for the best. And so he said, okay, we are going to go to a large city. So he took us to a city nearby, a pretty big city, almost the size of Chicago, and tried to find job or business, and nothing worked. So obviously, my mother kept saying that, yeah, everything that happens is for the best, but you have to make it so. And the job of making it so fell to my mother. And she made sure that we all worked very hard. She said the only path we have is that of education. Everybody needs to be very well educated. So we would go to school during the day, and in the evening, we would have to teach our younger sibling everything that he needed to learn for his school. So this did two things. One, we had to work very hard, and we learned a lot because we taught, and you cannot teach without learning. And, you know, all this pressure and threats and cajoling and all that finally paid off. You know, I got an admission into one of the best engineering schools in India, and one of my brothers became a doctor, two more became CPA accountants, another was a professor of mathematics. You know, basically everybody did very, very well. We went through many, many years of hard work, but we did it. You know, that instilled two values in my mind. One was education, how important education is, and second, family. You know, she kept saying that nobody can do everything by themselves, and since family is the one close to it, you have to depend on that. So those two became very important in my life.
Okay. So, Dilip, you can keep the microphone for the time being, because the next question is going to start with you.
Okay.
What is one of your most meaningful family traditions?
So one of my most meaningful family tradition actually deals directly with family. And what it is that we love to meet and eat together every chance that we get. So we just celebrated Diwali, we are going to celebrate Halloween, we are going to celebrate Thanksgiving and Christmas and Kwanzaa, whatever festival is there, we get together and celebrate. My extended family that is spread throughout the country, we still all get together with a conference call once a month. I was actually working in Pennsylvania, and we moved down to Chicago so we could be with our family. So just getting together with family on whatever excuse is the family tradition that we hold.
Okay. Teresa.
Okay, so in my family, we have a couple of family traditions that we honor. So talking about my extended family, is Christmas Eve. We will always make turkey then, and spaghetti, and mashed potatoes, and a salad, and desserts, and drinks. And like all the extended family on my mom's side, we'll get together. It was a pretty cool time because you will get to see all your cousins then. People who lived in different states will come together just for Christmas. So it was really nice. Also, my immediate family, they have a tradition where when it's a birthday, my mom will organize like a special meal on the weekend, and we will celebrate the birthday person. So I think like that's just an excuse to get together and eat something really
Charlie good. Is the co-host now.
Family is very important, but everything revolves around food, basically, and drinks too, of course, but basically food. And the other very, very important tradition for my family is celebrating my grandma's birthday on my mom's side. We always make a big party, we dance, we get together, we have a good time.
Okay, Sarah?
All right, so my tradition also involves food. And I always say that the holidays are the best time to be multiracial because of the food, y'all. So the big staple food that Mexicans will make on the holiday is tamales. Everyone loves tamales, but the thing is that they're such a pain to make that you can't make them that often. So that just makes the dish so much more special. And growing up, like it's always a team effort to make tamales. And I actually didn't start helping make tamales until I was in high school because I was just like, I didn't want to be that person who did it wrong when I was younger. So it definitely meant a lot to me to be able to contribute to making this dish that literally goes back to the Aztecs and even further back in history than that. So I think that always meant a lot to me. And then we would always have like a big Mexican dish for like Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. But when I was in high school, my sisters and I, we felt like we were kind of missing out on the American dishes. And yeah, I didn't think about how much labor this was asking my mom to do, but we asked her to start making the American dishes as well on Thanksgiving, and she graciously agreed. So we would have like the turkey and the stuffing and the cranberry sauce and the tamales, and it was a lot of work, y'all, but it was absolutely wonderful. And then along with the tradition of making the tamales, you always have to play music, and in particular, you have to play mariachi, the music that comes from Mexico, because it just makes it such a more lively experience when you're stuck there spreading dough for like 3 hours. It just makes it go by a little bit easier, I would say. So that's definitely a big, meaningful tradition for me.
Okay, so this last question will start with Teresa before we go to the audience, but I'll ask Teresa, how has your relationship with your cultural background changed as you've gotten older?
Well, as I was saying before, like in the northern part of Mexico, we are not so close with the culture. And I'm sad to say this, and I'm embarrassed to say it, but it's true. We don't have as close a relationship with the traditions that they have in Central Mexico, and I wish we had. So when I moved to the U.S. 6 years ago, I started to connect a little bit more with my Mexican side, and I realized how much I love and miss Mexican food. So whenever, for example, in Mexico, food is very important, and music too. So I always look for an opportunity to explore new Mexican places, to explore cultural events and things that are going on around the city. I feel like I appreciate more being Mexican, living in a different country, than I did when I was living back in Mexico.
Okay, Sarah?
Hi.
So for me, it was kind of like an ebb and flow in a few ways. So Spanish was my first language, and when I entered school, I learned English, and that caused me to forget a good amount of my Spanish, so I haven't been fluent since I was probably like 8. And so because of that, I kind of struggled to form like a more meaningful connection with my Mexican heritage, because I would just like struggle to like really communicate with like the extended members of my family, especially when we would visit Mexico. But when I was in college, I took a Mexican history and culture class, and that was just so incredibly powerful for me because, you know, y'all know I love history. And so learning about the Mayans and the Aztecs and the Mexican Revolution, like that just helped me forge such a stronger connection with my heritage. And then starting in 2020, I really made an effort to like learn more about like my African-American roots and not just like, and you know, learn the minutia of the civil rights movement, but everything before that, and all like the trailblazers that led to that incredibly powerful few decades and everything that has followed. So I think through my studies and through like my own curiosity, I've definitely been able to form a stronger connection with both aspects of my heritage. And you know, even though like I still don't have those same connections to like the culturally typical like African-American experiences, I don't feel like I'm an imposter anymore. I think I've more settled into accepting where I am and how I got to this point as it relates to like my cultural background and how I relate to both aspects of my heritage.
Okay. Dilip, can you answer the final question?
Denise?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm hearing that there's some problem with sound on Zoom, so if people could speak directly into the mic, I think that would help.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead, Dilip.
So, sure. as time goes by, the values that I had of education and family still remain very important, but they take a different focus. The education doesn't necessarily mean just academic education, but entire learning and analyzing and creating solutions, you know, for all kinds of problems from disability to accessibility to climate change and things like that. You know, to give a concrete example, I lost all my vision in 2019, and after spending a few months just pitying myself and wondering what to do, I decided to invest my time in learning all I can about the accessibility, about the assistive technology that is available. And I found out that in general, even with all the assistive technology, the health of web is not that good when it comes to accessibility. And I decided to study that, and finally I got a job where I audit websites for accessibility and hopefully make them better so all of us can benefit from that. The second value that I had was that of family support. And again, the meaning has expanded. The family no longer just means blood relations to me. It means everybody with whom I share interest. You know, it means work family, it means community. In fact, right now, I would say my family is you all, because we share this interest together. You know, we know how it feels. We all know how it feels to, you know, no matter how smart you are, to feel stupid just because you can't see something in front of you. And we all have to cope with it, and we do on a daily basis. So you are my family, and thank you for inviting me here. Thank you.
Well, welcome to our Federation family, Dilip. We are glad to have you. So we have a few more minutes, do we have any questions from the audience of our three panelists?
And while we're waiting for that, Patty, have Melissa Carney, Brian Finney, and Charlie Kenyon entered the room. Okay. All right.
Okay. Yes, Kathy.
If someone could run Kathy a mic.
Somebody should run her a mic because we need to be heard
over
Zoom.
There, it's working fine. I am a white heterosexual woman who grew up in a very traditional, very conservative family. Boy, have I changed. Wow. Oh, man. I was an introvert until college, and I've slowly become an extrovert. And I have so much fun, and I love all of you so much. And I had no self-esteem, no braille, no cane travel. I loved school. I was feature editor of my high school and junior high papers, which may have saved me in freshman rhetoric at McMurray. And the Federation has done so much for me. I've become much more assertive, as you saw this morning, my bad behavior.
You didn't
notice, so you noticed, I think. My self-esteem has grown so much. My braille has improved. My cane travel has improved. I love the Federation. You guys really are a family. I have my college family and my family and my Federation family, and I'm so blessed to have all of you guys. So thank you.
And we're blessed to have you, Kathy Randall.
Yes, absolutely. Does anyone have questions for our three panelists?
Kennedy?
Yes, Jennifer.
Where's Jennifer?
Behind you. 180.
Oh.
Isn't she
180? Oh.
Okay, so I'm not the only one that got a little disoriented.
I know. Okay, perfect. Thank you, panelists, very much. As a director of one of our three training centers, I know that there is a lot that I have to learn, and I know it is not always the student's responsibility to teach me the things I need to know. What advice would you give our training center directors in trying to build a more inclusive environment?
Okay. Anyone in particular would you like to have answer that question?
Not Sarah.
Not Sarah.
She and I can talk about that later.
Okay. So we will have maybe Teresa. Would you like to tackle that?
Melissa Carney is the co-host now.
Okay, so can we get her a mic?
The mic, Teresa.
Speak. Yeah, you got to come directly into the mic.
Is it better now?
Yes, much better.
Okay, so my first language is Spanish, and I think the number of people that speak Spanish as their first language is increasing, and it's going to keep increasing over time. So maybe having bilingual instructors might be good in some cases with some students. Oh, my God. I feel like I need to think more about this question and get back to you later, but that's what I can think for now.
Well, I will say, Jennifer, that we in the National Federation of the Blind, as you know, have taken a lot of steps. We have our diversity, equity, and inclusion statement on our web pages. We have a diversity, equity, inclusion committee with Colin Wong and Sean Calloway as the co-chairs and many other diversity groups. And anytime anytime anyone has a question, they are urged to email diversity@nfb.org and maybe seek out some of the members of the diversity panel to do presentations, perhaps answer questions. Many articles, as you've seen over the last 2 or 3 years about diversity, equity, and inclusion have appeared in the Braille Monitor. I think we're really highlighting, diversity in all of its forms, not just race and ethnicity, but also we're highlighting, people who have other disabilities in addition to blindness, which is a real important thing. Now, we've always recognized this, but I think President Riccobono has gone, and taken it to another level to really make it be, like I said earlier, be the core value. So I think if you consult with some of our other members from diverse backgrounds, that will certainly help you, as well as just reading literature about different cultures. Don't be afraid to, look at, cultural, read books having to do with diversity. So that would be my response. Any other questions?
Can I say something more about that?
Yes, go ahead,
I
Teresa.
I totally agree with Denise. Some training, cultural training, might be super useful because in different cultures, the roles, the gender roles, and how people perceive like disability and blindness is very, very different. Some cultures are ashamed that they try to hide it. Some people, like in Mexico, they're very sheltering, and your family will do everything for you and make you dependent in general. Maybe in some families it's different, but that's just like a cultural thing. So maybe understanding where your students are coming from, what's their background, just having like some training on different cultures and what are the different roles, because it's not the same, at least in Mexico. If a woman loses their vision or a male loses their vision, like the expectations for gender are very different. So the effects on the specific person are very different too after experiencing vision loss or being blind or visually impaired since birth. So that's what I would say, training, as Denise was.
I hope that helps, Jennifer.
Yes, muchas gracias, Teresa.
We may have time for one more question, and then we're going to be booted off the stage by Madam President. Oh, Crystal.
Crystal
I'm
Smith.
I'm coming your way.
We need... Okay.
To Sarah, I was going to ask you, when you were saying that, when you said that you didn't really know much about your black side of your family, I was going to ask you, have you embraced it more when you got older, but you answered it already? So I just want to say I'm really glad that you are trying to learn more about your other side of your family. I'm black, so I was really glad to hear that you're embracing both sides of your family, and I'm just glad that you didn't like isolate one side for another side. So I'm just really glad that you're embracing both of your sides. So I just want to say that.
Thank you, Crystal. Well, thank you, panelists, and thank you, audience. Thank you, Madam President, and I turn it back over to you.
Thank you.
Marilyn, do you mind if I just give a quick reminder?
Yes.
So we're closing donations for Pi Palooza at the adjournment of this general session, so y'all have until 5 p.m., okay?
Yeah, so we got about 50 more minutes.
So, you know, I want to see Elizabeth get a pie. I want to see Teresa get a pie.
What's the dollar amount, Glenn? Where are the students at?
We're the same as what we were.
Oh, 5:30?
I haven't had any more come in. I'm at the front table, right in front of the head table.
Clock is ticking, y'all. I want to see.
So you're at $530? So $70 more for Teresa to get a pie?
Had 535 was.
Oh, 535, so 65 more? No, I think Rousey needs a pie. So what you got, Madam Immediate Past President?
No, I was just going to say, by the way, Glenn, I'm going to jail the 50 that I promised this morning. Thank you. So are you counting that in the figures?
Okay.
We need to make this happen.
How far away did you say before we get Ms. Teresa?
$65 there, 535 currently. Yes. Rousey needs a pie, $265.
Guys. If somebody can pitch in, I can throw in another 25 if somebody will join you.
I'll toss in 25.
Right, let's see.
Well, I'll throw in another 50.
Oh, shoot, now hold on. Who can do math? Vance, are you in the house? Math. Okay.
So we have Denise with 25, Debbie with 25, and Glenn said 50. This is Sarah. I'm also committing 25.
So that's 125.
Helen, I gave 50 earlier.
Right, but I think that's already counted. Was that counted? Bridget has 40. Okay, we're moving up, Rousey.
So we got Teresa.
Oh, an additional 40? Okay.
Well, yeah, we got Teresa.
Hold on.
So math people, Bridget, help us out. Vance, help us.
I want to say that's 165.
Wait, can you repeat those?
Okay. So Denise said 25. Okay. Debbie said 25. Glenn said 50. I said 25. And Bridget said 40.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, so what's the number that you all are at? What's the number? Okay, so you need 215 more?
No.
Oh, okay. That's why I'm like, what? They said someone was. All right.
$800. Now, who really wants to see Adamo get a pie? $200 more, y'all.
So you're up to the 800, so Rousey is getting the pie?
I believe so.
Oh, yeah.
We need 200.
All right, so, because I want to be the one who gets to throw one of these pies. So.
We need 200.
Yeah, so, well, I'm not going that high.
Come on, get a double a pie.
I'll go up another 50. So I've already given Glenn 50. I'll do another 50. So I'm at 100. So.
We've had a few that are 100, so if somebody goes over 100, they'll be our biggest donor.
What is that, Ellen?
Oh, Ellen's matching.
Oh, no, Bridget has done 140.
140, okay, so Bridget's
up. Oh. You got to beat 140.
I might miss it.
Wait, so what's our total?
I'm trying to figure that out at the moment. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, we will come back to you. We don't want to keep our Democracy Live! Presenters waiting. So do the math while they're presenting about electronic ballot delivery in Illinois. Melissa Carney, Charlie Kenyon, and Brian Finney, are you there on Zoom?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Who is I? This is Charlie Canoon from Democracy Live.
All right. I think Melissa was in the room too. Is that correct?
Melissa is in the room. Brian was unable to make it today.
All right. Great. So Charlie Kenyon and Melissa Carney are here from Democracy Live. As you all remember, Democracy Live is a gold level convention sponsor. So we wanted to say thank you to Democracy Live. All right. I turn the floor over to you, Melissa.
Yeah, Charlie here. I'll go ahead and open it and chat a little bit about Democracy Live and our experience around the country and in Illinois. And then I'll hand it over to Melissa. When Melissa will demonstrate the Omni ballot, which you have at your disposal in the state of Illinois right now. And then we'll close it and open up for question and answer if you wish. So we are Democracy Live is really excited about our relationship with the state of Illinois and the National Federation throughout the country and specifically here in Illinois. I've gotten to know Marilyn a little bit and really appreciate her leadership and her communication with us. It's been outstanding. So Marilyn, thank you for your guidance and your help through this. We're very, very excited about working in Illinois. Democracy Live was formed in 2008 by our CEO and founder, Brian Finney. Brian has been in the election world since 2000. He cut his teeth in the election space in right after the 2000 election in Florida. And I can't think of a more exciting, challenging place to be than right after the Florida election in 2000. Not long after that, our national headquarters is outside of Seattle, and the state of Washington in 2008 went 100% vote by mail. And what that did was kind of threw a roadblock, into our voters with disabilities in the state. And we reacted quickly. Brian actually had a neighbor who was visually impaired. And the only way that he could vote early on was to go to a voting center. And he asked Brian to take him to the voting center. And on that car trip to the voting center, Democracy Live was born in the brain of Brian Finney. He thought it was awfully ironic that really the only people that had to go to the voting booth were visually impaired and voters with disabilities. And he found that very, very puzzling. And, you know, he literally went through the mindset like, well, we can put a man on the moon. Why can't our voters with disabilities vote from home? How can we settle that? And so, you know, he went to the University of Washington. He hired the top computer science student out of the University of Washington, and then worked with the University of Washington Center for Disabilities on, you know, coming up with this program that would allow voters with disabilities to vote from home as an absentee voter, and at least have that option to vote from home privately and independently. They can mark their ballot privately and independently. So, you know, fast forward 14 years later, and we are an extremely busy company, very engaging company, fun company to work for. It's an exciting, space to work in. And we really feel like we are helping our fellow citizens. And we're excited about that. And we're excited about working with Illinois. We feel like the Secretary of State and the Office of the Secretary of State has leaned into this issue. There's a little ways to go. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we move forward. But as of right now, the voters with disabilities in the state of Illinois have the ability to request an accessible absentee ballot from their county election office, and they will be sent a link to a portal on Amazon Web Services, the federally approved Amazon Web Services, a federally approved secured cloud that our voters can access their ballot through. And so right now, if you cannot make it to the polls, and by the way, we are not trying to replace the polling experience. We support the polling experience. We just want you all to have the option to stay at home and vote privately and independently if you cannot make it to your polling place. So that's really where we're at. Like I said, we do believe in the polling experience. We provide the state of Minnesota with their ADA machines. We use off-the-shelf tablets with our software uploaded on them. And those voters go to their counties and they come up to a tablet that they would use in their everyday life. It's not a big 80-pound behemoth of a machine that is working sometimes and isn't working sometimes. And oftentimes the poll workers are intimidated by this, and some of them aren't even able to, you know, get that machine moved around. And I don't know if that's happening in Illinois, but I will tell you, we've heard plenty of horror stories around the country about those polling experiences. But back to our absentee balloting portal. We encourage the voters in Illinois to use this, to have an at-home experience and be able to take their time, educate themselves, and mark their ballot. We have one more step that we'd like to be able to take, and Melissa can talk a little bit about that when she gives the demonstration. I just sent forward to Maryland just a few minutes ago a great article that came out of the state of Massachusetts, where their voters now passed legislation that allows their voters with disabilities to be able to access their ballot, mark it, and submit it and return it back to their county office in their municipality. So we're very, very pleased to work with Massachusetts and Rhode Island. Rhode Island is another state that just passed legislation that allows electronic return. We work with North Carolina, West Virginia, South Carolina, Alabama. Those are states that allow some voters, whether it's geography or voters with disabilities who are disenfranchised either by being somewhere else in the world, or have the challenge of a disability, to access their ballot. So there's about seven states right now, and some other larger municipalities like New York City that we work with. King County here in the Seattle area is the largest, one of the largest city or counties actually in the country that allows this technology to be used. So, you know, we are hoping that the numbers are increasing in Illinois in use. And we encourage those of you who cannot get to your polling place to access your ballot. And I don't know if that the requests have, you know, have come to a stop now, or if you can still request. I'm sorry to say, I do not know the timeline on your ballot. It's kind of different in every state. But if you are still interested in using the accessible absentee ballot, please contact your county election office, and they should be able to send you the link. So with me today is our educational outreach consultant, Melissa Carney. She is in New York right now, and she has been demonstrating this ballot you know, across the country for a number of years. So I want to hand it off to Melissa Carney right now, who will share her screen and take you through the ballot. And then after that, we will open it up for questions and answers. So without any further ado, Melissa, please take it from here.
Thank you, Charlie. Good afternoon, NFB Illinois. Hope you're all doing well. My name is Melissa Carney, and I am an educational outreach consultant for Democracy Live! Today, I'll be walking you through a demo of the Omni Ballot one-way system with JAWS and Edge. However, I just want to point out that this technology has been tested with over 90 combinations of screen readers and browsers. So you can mark your ballot using anything from VoiceOver to JAWS to NVDA and browsers such as Safari, Edge, Chrome, etc. This ballot is also fully accessible with your Braille display for those of you who use one of those. All right, so without further ado, I'm going to share my screen and walk you through a demo as quickly as possible just so we have time for questions. I want to be respectful of our next presenter.
Melissa, Democracy Live! Has started screen sharing.
All right, so.
Mute, currently unmuted, hold it. Voter lookup work micros main region.
Is that coming through okay for anyone on Zoom?
Sounds good to me.
Perfect, thank you, Charlie. All right, so as I'm going through the balloting tool, I'm just going to announce exactly what I'm doing, and then you'll be able to hear how JAWS is presenting.
Voter lookup heading level one.
So at the top of each page and the top of each part of the process, you're going to have a centralized heading announcing what part of the process you're on. So as you can hear, it just told us that we're on the voter lookup page. If we down arrow here and on any other page, we're going to hear a set of instructions on how to move forward.
Please fill in the fields to access your ballot.
All right, so we'll continue to down arrow.
First name, required edit. Enter.
I'm going to enter into this edit box and I'm going to type in sample. Tab.
Sample. Last name edit required.
I'm going to type in voter. Tab.
Voter. Month combo box required invalid.
Going to down arrow to January for our birth month.
One.
Tab.
Day combo box required in.
Down arrow to the first.
One.
Tab once more.
Year combo box
required. For today's purposes, I'm going to down arrow to 1999. Tab again.
Voter lookup continue button to activate, press enter.
And I'm going to press space or enter on continue.
Space, voter lookup. Main region, ballot marking heading level one.
Okay, now that we've entered in our voter specific credentials, we've now arrived on the ballot marking part itself. So again, you have that centralized heading announcing where you are. Underneath, you'll find the instructions.
Your ballot is presented below. To mark your selection, click on the checkbox. To remove a selection, click on the checkbox again. To vote for a qualified write-in candidate who is not listed on the ballot, click the checkbox beside the write-in space at the end of the candidate list. Then type the candidate's name in the space. Heading level 2, official ballot.
Okay, and this ballot and the review page are both going to be organized in headings. So I'm going to press H for heading here to move to the first contest.
For U.S. Senator heading level 3.
Okay, that's the contest name. If we down arrow,
vote for not more than one.
It'll tell you how or the instructions for this contest.
Group start for U.S. Senator. 3 checkboxes.
And then how many options you have to choose from. And then, of course, our options.
Santa Claus checkbox not checked. Ebenezer Scrooge checkbox not checked. Write-in checkbox not checked.
All right, I'm going to up arrow and choose Santa Claus. Some very exciting options we have today.
Ebenezer Santa Claus checkbox not checked. Space for U.S. Senator group Santa Claus checkbox not checked. The check press space bar checked.
Okay, I'm going to proceed to the next contest. So again, using H for heading, now that we've made that selection.
For representative to Congress heading level 3.
There's our contest name, down arrow.
Vote for not more than one. Group start for representative to Congress. 4 checkboxes. Amelia Earhart checkbox not checked. Charles Chuck Eager checkbox not checked. Charles Lindbergh checkbox not checked. Write-in checkbox not checked.
Okay, I'm going to up arrow and select Amelia Earhart.
Charles Chuck Amelia Earhart checkbox not checked. Space for representative to Congress group Amelia Earhart checkbox not checked. The check press space bar checked.
You'll notice as I'm going through that every time I make a selection, it's going to also repeat back the contest that you're making that selection for, so there's no confusion. All right, next contest and next heading.
City Council heading level 3.
Down arrow.
Vote for not more than 2. Group start City Council. 5 checkboxes. Johnny Cash checkbox not checked. Elvis Presley checkbox not checked. Dolly Parton checkbox not checked. Write in 1 of 2 checkbox not checked.
Okay, so I'm going to up arrow and choose
Dolly Parton checkbox not checked.
Dolly. And what I'm also going to do here is, if you noticed, it's asking us to make 2 selections instead of 1. So here I'm going to make an intentional error and only select 1. That way you can see how the system will display that you might have made a mistake in our review process, which is coming up next after we make our selection. So again, keep in mind, I'm making 1 instead of 2 selections here.
Elvis Dolly Parton checkbox not checked. Space City Council Group Dolly Parton checkbox checked. A clear check mark. Press space bar.
All right. Next contest. So H for heading.
For City Waste Director heading level 3.
Down arrow.
Vote for not more than 1. Group start for City Waste Director. 2 checkboxes. DR William McDougall checkbox not checked.
Okay, and here I'm going to demonstrate how to fill in a
write-in checkbox not checked.
Write-in candidate. So all you have to do is press space.
Space for City Waste Director Group. Write-in checkbox checked. A clear check mark. Press space bar.
So check that write-in candidate box. And now if you down arrow.
Write-in.
Underneath. Edit. There has now been an edit box that will pop up. So I'm going to enter in to this box.
Enter. Write-in edit type.
And I'm actually going to, in honor of Brian, even though he can't be here today, I am going to submit Brian Finney.
Brian.
All right.
Escape, right in.
So now if we up arrow, I escaped out of that that edit box. If I down arrow.
Edit Brian Finney.
You're going to see that I have now entered in Brian Finney to that write-in candidate edit box. That's all that's needed to do to make that selection of a write-in candidate for this contest. All right, moving on. So H for heading.
Article 1 heading level 3.
Down arrow.
Vote yes or no.
This is going to be a text-based contest.
Shall Chapter I, Section 103 of the Voterville City Charter be hereby amended as follows. Chapter 1, Incorporation and General Provisions, Section 103. Wards established. There shall be 3 wards for the City of Voterville, and the boundaries of the wards shall be fixed from time to time by the Board of Civil Authority subject to the approval of the City Council. The boundaries shall be fixed so as to provide equal or near equal distribution of population among the 3 wards in accordance with the most recent federal census. Group start Article 1. 2 checkboxes. Yes checkbox not checked. No checkbox not checked.
Okay, so I'm going to up arrow and select yes.
Yes checkbox not checked. Space Article 1 group. Yes checkbox not checked. A check press space bar. Checked.
Okay, and then I'm going to continue to down arrow past this context.
No checkbox not group end. Go back button. Continue button.
And underneath, we're going to find our continue button. So I'm going to click on that.
Space. Selection review.
And now, as Josh so helpfully announced, we're on the selection review page. So again, that centralized heading under which we'll find the instructions for this part of the process. So we'll down arrow.
Your ballot choices are shown below. To change any selection, click the change button next to your selection. Heading level 2 official ballot.
Once again, this is going to be organized by heading, so we can press H.
For U.S. Senator heading level 3.
We have the contest name, down arrow.
Santa Claus.
We have our selection.
Change for U.S. Senator button.
And the change button associated with this particular contest. So once again, next heading.
For Representative to Congress heading level 3.
Name.
Amelia Earhart.
Selection.
Change for Representative to Congress button.
And change button.
City Council heading level 3.
Okay, pay close attention to this one.
Dolly Parton. Warning, missing 1 of 2 selections.
So that is that error message I warned you would pop up if I only selected 1 candidate instead of 2. Now, sometimes you might only be comfortable selecting 1 candidate that you're familiar with, so you can bypass this error message and pretend that it doesn't exist. But this is just a way that the system will double check that you meant to do what you said you did, so that just in case you did miss a selection and it was an accident, you have the option to go back and fix it accordingly. Okay.
Change City Council button.
So I'm going to walk you through what you would do if you did make that mistake, in fact, and you wanted to change it and make that correction. So we would press space on the change button associated with this contest.
Space City Council heading level 3.
It's going to bring you back to this contest on the ballot itself. So if we down arrow.
Vote for not more than 2. Group start City Council. 5 checkboxes.
It's going to look just as it did before, but we have to make that additional selection.
Johnny Cash checkbox not checked. Elvis Presley checkbox not checked.
So we're going to check Elvis here.
Space City Council Group. Elvis Presley checkbox not checked. A check press space bar checked.
And then if we continue to down arrow.
Dolly Parton checkbox checked.
You'll see that Dolly is still checked, so no further action is needed. We can continue to down arrow.
Write in, one write in, two approve end. Go back to review page button.
And we'll press the go back to review page button.
Space, city council heading level 3.
Now we're back on the review page. Once again, it has brought us to this exact contest. And if we down arrow.
Elvis Presley, Dolly Parton, change city council button.
You can see that the error message has disappeared. We're only seeing our selections and the change button. So it's uniform with the rest of the contest. Again, just to reiterate, you do not have to fix that error if you do not want to. Okay, next contest for review.
For City Waste Director heading level 3.
Down arrow.
Write in Brian Finney.
And we have our write in.
Change for City Waste Director button.
The change button. And finally.
Article 1 heading level 3.
Down arrow.
Yes. Change Article 1 button.
All right. And that concludes the review process. So we can, as before, continue down underneath.
Link skip to bottom. Go back button.
There's a go back.
Continue button.
And there's a continue button. So I'm going to click there.
Space. Print your selections heading level 1.
And now we come to the point of the process where we need to print our selections. Now, I call this half accessibility, right? So as Charlie was talking about, some states such as Massachusetts allow you to both electronically mark and return your ballot accessibly. As we know, sometimes it's difficult to have access to a printer that sometimes requires transportation. Not to mention that it can be difficult to figure out where exactly we're supposed to provide a physical signature. So the hope is that with your advocacy efforts, Illinois can eventually reach full accessibility and eliminate this need to print and have additional options for verification, such as a voter-specific PIN to get through this process. So keep that in mind when you're thinking about how to advocate in your state. All right, so moving on, this is the process as it stands right now, or a sample of it in Illinois. You have to print your selection. So we're going to down arrow on this page to hear the instructions.
Click on the print selections button below to print your ballot selections. After your selections finish printing, click the continue button to download your return packet. Print selections button.
All right, so we are going to press there to print our selections.
Space, print selections button to activate, press enter. Print your alert, document fit to page complete, print need help button.
Okay.
Heading level 1 print.
And since I'm not going to print today and I'm going to save some paper, I'm just going to press escape and we're going to pretend I did print. All right. But all you would do here is just identify your settings and print. You can also save to a PDF. So this is really important for those folks who may not have a printer that's easily accessible to them. You can save it onto your computer, save it onto a flash drive, and email it or take it elsewhere to be printed.
Escape, print your selections, print selections button to activate, press enter.
So we're going to assume that we printed out your selections successfully, after which...
Go back button, continue button.
You're going to press space on the continue button.
Space, continue button to activate, press enter, return instructions.
Okay, now here you're going to have a set of return instructions. Again, this is going to vary from state to state. Just because of time constraints today, I'm actually going to bypass these instructions. I'll let you listen to a couple lines of what they might look like and then skip the rest just for time purposes.
From our office, a vote by mail packet containing a backup paper ballot as well as a return postage paid certificate envelope will be mailed to you. The return certificate envelope must be used to mail your voted ballot electronic or your paper backup back to our office. What is enclosed? It will find the following with your vote by mail packet.
Okay, so that's just a brief sample of what this might look like. Again, I'm going to skip through a lot of this just because of time.
List of 3, bullet backup, bullet seekers, bullets list end. Returning your list of 3, 1, place on 2, 3, list end. Very important, you at the time your ballot need to update before your vote by list of 3 item, 1, hole 2, the signature 3, you will list end. Returning your ballot, return in person, FL3Z, never give your vote felony notice under Florida law, go back button.
All right, so essentially it's going to tell you how you need to enclose your ballot, where to send it, there's a felony notice, a couple other objects here, but that's a general example of what you might see, and I apologize, we don't have time to listen to all of that.
End session button.
So as soon as you have observed these instructions and you're comfortable with your ballot selections, you've printed them out successfully, everything's taken care of.
Main region powered by end session button.
You're going to press the end session button. So I'm going to do that now.
Space technical support link. The heading level 1 success.
And then you're going to get the success message. So we can down arrow to hear that.
The ballot is printed with your selections on your ballot. You have the option to scan and re-add back your ballot selections. The next step is to fold your ballot for privacy and insert the ballot into your absentee ballot return envelope. Please be sure to sign your name in the designated location. Thank you for voting.
All right, and that is
mute
the process.
Melissa, Democracy Live has stopped screen share.
So that is the process, start to finish. I hope that was very informative for all of you. Again, this is half accessibility. So in Illinois, this is what you currently have, but hopefully with your efforts as an affiliate, you can make sure that this process is fully accessible from start to finish, and you have the option to electronically vote from the comfort of your home using the assistive technology that makes you feel the most comfortable and independent as a voter. Thank you so much. I'm not sure if we have time for questions, but we're happy to take them if time allows.
Thank you, Melissa and Charlie. We can take two if there are any questions. Okay, Avant, and then I think I heard Cheng. Okay. Do you have a mic, Patty? All right, we need, can someone run a mic over to Patty and then to Denise, and those will be the only two questions. We're almost done for the afternoon session.
Thank you. It's on already. Yes. All right. My question really is, what can Democracy Live do, or what can we do? Because we're in this cycle in Chicago in particular, where the application process for requesting the accessible ballot is in itself inaccessible. So very frustrating. I attempted to use it myself this time. I actually did do things inaccessibly last time, but I insisted this time that it be accessible. And I gave up and went to the polls. So you know what they're going to say is, not enough people are using this system.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you very much for that. You know, we have found, we found that out. Originally we found that out in Michigan. Michigan has been using this system for probably as long as anybody in the country right now, where we have the ballot delivery without the return option. And early on, they discovered that their request system was not accessible. So they asked us to build them one, and we did. And it's just another feature of the Omni ballot, hence the term Omni. And so we do have that option, but your state has to turn it on. So again, that's another reason for your advocacy, is to get that part of it accessible. It makes absolutely no sense to have an inaccessible request form and request system to get your accessible ballot. I mean, the irony of that is unfathomable. So, you know, that is going to have to take, more advocacy and calling attention to that, because we are to a point where we might be in a situation in Illinois where it is use it or lose it. But they need to understand why people aren't using it. And one of those reasons, and maybe the biggest reason, is that the request is not accessible. So I would reach out at the county level. I would also reach out at the state level and really give a concentrated effort.
Anyway, I'll appeal to Denise, but I think that you should also know, when they hear that people, when you hear from Chicago and the like that people aren't using it, that there's a reason we're not using it.
Right. Yep. And we will make sure that the state hears from us. I've just taken this note down. I will make sure that I get in touch with our operations, lead, Felicia Ehrlich. I'll let her know before the weekend is out that, you know, there's an issue with the request there in Illinois. Thank you.
Glenn, if you could get the mic to Denise. And Ellen Bartelt, if you could be ready next to talk about 2023 Midwest Student Seminar after this presentation.
Madam President, I'll try to be as quick as I can. First of all, some people in the room may not know, we did just this spring get a legislative solution to have electronic ballot delivery. So it's only been the law in Illinois since May 13th. We learned, because we don't go through the Secretary of State in Illinois, we use the Illinois Board of Election, that because we met with them on September 6th, that they had not even gotten out the word to their election authorities on September 6th, even though they had 3 months to do that. They didn't start working with the election authorities until the end of September. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we learned is they didn't bother to get out the word to blind, low vision, and print disabled voters. We are a diverse population, and we deserve as much time and attention as racial and ethnic groups do, but we didn't get that. So the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois, along with the other partners in our coalition that helped us to get the legislation to where it is, we've been doing the heavy lifting to get out the word about having accessible absentee voting in this state. We know our work is not done. However, we've contacted all of our partners, the Chicago Lighthouse, the Bureau of Blind Consumers and Clients Services, and Second Sense, just to get out the word. So just finally, I will say that if you considered voting absentee and wanted to possibly use the accessible ballot, did you do so? And if you didn't, why not? And would you ever consider doing so? I know I've heard a exhaustive, detailed discussion from two of our members, so I'm asking the rest of you to let us know what problems, if any, you have encountered if you've tried to get an accessible ballot. So we are going to go further and try to seek return in the next general assembly. And really, we believe that this is a civil rights issue. So whether one person use it, 40 people use it, 400 people use it, it should not matter. The state legislature should not be looking to roll back access to the ballot box for people who are blind, low vision, or have print disabilities. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Denise Avant. And thank you to all of the advocacy in this room and out in Zoom for those streaming who went down to into downtown Chicago and did the work and did the protest so that we could get SB 829 to be a reality so that we would have electronic delivery. Thank you, Charlie and Melissa. You're welcome to stay with us for the rest of the general sessions if you like. But we thank you so much again for your time this afternoon, and we thank Democracy Live for being a goal-level convention sponsor.
Thank you for having us.
Yep, thank you for having us. And Melissa, nice job. Thank you. And we will be in touch. We
get that email, Charlie. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Ellen Bartelt. All right, door prize. If Glenn, if you can run her a mic, that's probably easier. And door prize while he's getting you the mic. Yep.
Yes. So we received a donation from Fillmore in Tuscaloosa, Close Candy. We also received a figurine donated by Debbie Stein. And we have $20 cash donated by the Chicago chapter. And our lovely co-chair is grabbing the paper now. We're going to keep them on there.
Mary Noga, are you in the room? Mary Noga. Doesn't look like she's here.
Mary Noga.
I think that was the Student Excellence Award, maybe one of his family members, I think. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think they're here anymore. Leanne? Okay, yeah. Okay, again? Yeah.
Oh, my God. I threw my own name.
Oh. Well, we know you're here. All right, so... All right, so we're going to go a little bit over on our general sessions, but I was just reported to by Glenn Moore that Pi Palooza is up to how much, Glenn?
$895.
So if you, $105 more dollars, Adelmo V. Hill gets a pie in the face. So close.
Come on, yet, people, you can do it.
So close, but yet so far. All right, but they said until 5 o'clock, but it will be open for Pi Palooza until we close general sessions, which hopefully will be maybe about another 15, maybe 20 minutes. All right, Ellen Bartelt to talk about 2023 Midwest Student Seminar, and then Debbie Stein and Patty Chain to talk about national and state scholarships.
Hello, everybody again. So, as we stated this morning, if you guys were with us, or I hope you were, that Midwest 2023 will be from March 24th through 26th at the Holiday Inn Express O'Hare, where we were last year. Sarah Luna and Logan Stencil will be running that planning committee. They'll probably have a lot of exciting things planned. A connection to our Pi Palooza fundraiser doing now, we took a lot of that money for our 22 Midwestern seminar and gave it to stipends for students to attend to help with some of the financial responsibilities to attend Midwest. So we gave them a stipend that helped with paying a registration fee and paying for the hotel and stuff like that. Some years in the past, we've done Midwest, we've gone out to eat. We didn't do that this year during COVID. We'll see what the planning committee does. It's really a cool event where you get to meet students and leaders from all over the Midwest, from Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota. And you can make a lot of connections. And so I met someone when I was at Midwest this year that actually helped me get a job for the summer working with blind students virtually. So you never know what connections can lead to a job, an internship, or just making friends with connections with new people. So hopefully everyone can attend our upcoming Midwestern seminar.
Thank you, Ellen. So Debbie Stein and Patty Chain to talk about 2023 National and State Scholarships. And then after them, it's Denise Avant and Dustin Cather to talk about federal legislation.
I have a mic in hand, which I guess means I'll start. We have both a national scholarship program, which gives away $38,000 scholarships. That's not a total of 8,000. That's 8,000 times 30 a year. The applications for those will open at the latest December 1st and are due March 31st. And the best way to not win one is to not apply. So I would encourage you, if you want to win, you need to apply. And you need to not be discouraged if you didn't get one the first time. Most people who do win don't win the first time. That process can be learned. You can learn more by going to nfb.org/scholarships with the S on the end. You will also win a trip to our national convention in Houston, which is where you meet all the awesome mentors that you've heard many people like Elizabeth talk about today. We have had a state scholarship in this state so long that I won one way back in 1986 or 85. I can't remember which year, but it goes back. Now, back then, I think that the top scholarship was $1,000. And we had a couple that were under $1,000. I say that because we will typically give away $6,000, $7,000, sometimes as much as $10,000 in state scholarships. So that application basically follows the same process and the same dates. So you can submit the same material to both committees, which makes the process easier. If you want more information about the state scholarships, you can, number one, either talk to Debbie and I, because we're here this weekend, or you can visit nfbofillinois.org, nfbofillinois.org, and then you'll see one of the tabs is scholarships. So that's a brief overview of scholarships. Well, I've got the mic. Do you want me to jump ahead and talk about PAC and DMC so we're not dancing mics?
Yeah, I thought about that. Yes, please.
Okay. Great. Great minds think alike. So I wanted to switch to my other hat. I wear a lot of hats. I serve as Director of Outreach for the National Federation of Blind. I want to talk to you in that vein about two of our fundraising programs. One is the pre-authorized contribution program. Now, those of you who are willing to be public about it, who in the room is a member on PAC now? I am.
Hi.
Okay, great. But not enough. Everybody should be on PAC if you want to build our organization. This is unrestricted money. It goes into the national treasury and can be spent on whatever the national board and our president decide to spend it on. That could be scholarships. It could be pulling up our voting rights initiatives in 35 states in the last 2 years. We have got to be flexible, and the only way we can do that is with unrestricted money. Now, how much do you have to give? $5 a month. Yeah, I mean, even if you don't have a lot of money, I remember a gentleman, and most of you in the room will know who was on a fixed income who made a point of doing two things. He always did the minimum contribution to PAC, and he always saved for national convention. Always. You can do the same. For $5 a month, you're probably giving up some tea and coffee, especially if you're a Starbucks fan, not to mention the price of a glass of wine or a bottle of beer. So that's one, is pre-authorized contributions. And please, there's lots of contests around that make it fun, but you can go to nfb.org/PAC, nfb.org/PAC, and sign up on PAC, or you can increase your PAC contribution. Yeah, so awesome. Now, I want to switch just for a minute and talk to you about our legacy society. You know, we turn dreams into reality. So we call our legacy society the Dream Makers Circle. Nobody ever wants to think about the legacy because you have to think about what happens when you pass. But if we don't do that, we can't take care of the kids that we saw here today. We saw kids that need the same opportunities that we have and need more opportunities than we had. So if you want to make it better with each generation, we've all got to give. The Dream Maker Circle, you can enter in lots of ways. People always think, oh, I need a will, I need a lawyer, I need an accountant. No. You can do it that way. And if you have a really complicated estate, you probably have to do it that way. But most people who are joining the Dream Maker Circle now are doing it by either designating a beneficiary on a bank account, an investment account, a retirement account. You can even, you know, if you have a checking account, you can go into your bank and tell them you want to designate the National Federation of Blind or the National Federation of Blind of insert state as the payable on death entity for that account for a percentage or a dollar amount. So if you want more information on the Dream Maker Circle and all the ways that you can decide to enter, how simple it can be, and we know you want to take care of your family first. Of course you do. Everybody does. But there are still ways to give back to this organization that we all love and take care of your family. So that concludes my remarks. Thanks.
Thank you, Patty Chang. Denise Yvonne and Dustin Cather of Federal Legislation, and then we will end after we talk about Bell. We have some Bell kids here. We have Debbie Stein and we have Amy Lund. So Denise Yvonne and Dustin Cather, and then okay. Debbie and Amy and the kids, you're up next.
Whatever.
So I have the mic, so I'll start first and Dustin will finish up. I will start by talking about next year's Washington seminar. Keep in mind we're not done with this year's federal legislation. But Washington seminar will start on January 30th of 2023 with the Great Gathering Inn. And it will go to February 2nd, I believe, that Thursday, but although Illinois is usually done by the 1st. I know all of you wonder whether it will be virtual or in person. We don't know because that's dependent on Congress, of course. We will have our board meeting in December, so the board will, our national board, will make its decision about whether to do it virtually or in person. My guess is that it will be, our vote will be to have it in person, but again, it's up to Congress. The application period will open, and because our president is waiting to hear from the board, the dates of the application due date, I believe, is December 15th instead of December 1st, which is when we would normally have it. We would like people from across the state to apply, not just in Chicago. And we certainly would like a parent to attend and represent us, students to represent us, as well as our other members. So we want to get a good cross-section of people to represent us at the upcoming Washington seminar. We do want to go in person, but we also recognize that virtually in these past 3 years, we got a lot of participation. But we will see what will happen. So I will turn it over to Dustin to talk about what we have left over for this year before this Congress finally adjourns. Dustin?
I got a mic. Yeah, thank you, Denise. So I'm just going to do a federal legislation rundown.
I love you, Dustin.
I know, I'm awesome. So H.R. 431, or as you know it, as the Access Technology Affordability Act, has a total of 165 co-sponsors in the House, and we have a total of 15 co-sponsors from our wonderful state of Illinois. Now, I do this every time I have to give one of these, so we'll just do the rundown so we can recognize these great representatives. So we got Representative Bradley Snyder, Representative Lauren Underwood, Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy, Representative Bobby Rush, Representative Mike Bost, I'm not going to say representative anymore, Rodney Davis, we got Jesus Chewy Garcia, Ms. Jan Schakowsky, all right, Robin Kelly, Marie Newman, Mike Quigley, Darren LaHood, Danny Davis, Sean Kasten, and Bill Foster. And so ATAA's companion bill, S.212, that's the bill in the Senate with the same name, has a total of 40 co-sponsors, and Senator Tammy Duckworth from Illinois is a wonderful co-sponsor on that piece of legislation. All right, moving on, we have H.R. 4853, which is the Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act, which has a total of 63 co-sponsors, and it was introduced by Illinois-owned Jan Schakowsky. Yeah. So there's, I think, four or five. So we got Sean Kasten from Illinois, Raja Krishnamoorthy has co-sponsored it, Danny Davis, and Marie Newman, and also Jesus Chewy Garcia, Mike Quigley. Our next piece of legislation, H.R. 2373, which is the Transformation to Competitive Integrated Employment Act, also has a total of 63 co-sponsors. And the representatives from Illinois are Mike Quigley, Jan Sikowski, Robin Kelly. And its companion bill in the Senate, which is S.3238, has one co-sponsor. Total. Oh, am I forgetting anything? Literally a month from this date, two new bills got introduced to the House, and the Senate. One was by Illinois' very own Senator Tammy Duckworth, and that is the Website and Software Application Accessibility Act. So, yes. So S.4998 currently has three co-sponsors in the Senate, and H.R. 9021 currently has one co-sponsor. It's only been a month, yeah, excellent. So make sure to call Senator Duckworth here for our Illinois people and say thank you for introducing this awesome piece of legislation. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Dustin and Denise, for that great report about federal legislation. So there are still a few minutes to work our way up to getting our national representative, Mr. Adelmo Vigil, a pie in the face. But until we adjourn, Amy Lund, Debbie Stein, and the Bell Kids, please come on up. This is our last presentation.
All right. I have a microphone. I'm near the kids. We're going to kind of stay camped out there right next to each other. Do we want to get Debbie a microphone if there's another one? I think there's one on the table behind you, Glenn.
I really don't have a whole lot to say because I worked behind the scenes. I coordinated the program, which meant sending out reminders, sending out paperwork, making sure medical forms got turned in, the not very exciting stuff. So I really want to turn it to Amy, who had feet on the ground, who was right there with the kids, with the volunteers, and we, of course, want to hear from our Bell Kids. So, Amy, take it away.
Thank you. So I've been very fortunate to be the lead teacher for Illinois' Bell Academies since they've started here in Illinois. And to give a very quick rundown, Bell is the Braille Enrichment for Literacy and Learning Academy. And we do Braille every day. We do independent training and non-visual techniques. And we have a lot of fun. We are fortunate to have two programs in Illinois. We have a Chicago Day program, which is 2 weeks long. We are at the Chicago Lighthouse in the Medical District, and we are able to use mass transit for all of our field trips in downtown. So that's a really fun experience. And then we have our Springfield program, which is a one-week program where we are fortunate enough to put up a parent and child in a hotel if they come from outside of Springfield, Illinois. And we do parent programming as well as the Braille and non-visual techniques planning every day, and we do a field trip in Springfield as well. So a little bit different. A lot of parent camaraderie comes out of the Springfield program, and I'm really proud of that one. It's been a lot of fun to do. But I do have two kids here from our Bell Academy Chicago this summer, and so I just wanted to ask, can you tell me one of the things you liked about the program, Naomi? Oh, you're shaking your head. Come on. No? What'd you tell me earlier? Can I say? Yes or no? All right, Ahmed, will you tell us what you enjoyed this summer? Oh, we got shy kids now. Come on, you were not shy this whole time sitting at this table.
No.
Nope.
I don't want to. If you say
No. All right, well, I may defer to some of the family members in a minute, but we were able to do a lot of fun things, and that's only possible by having the blind mentors who come and volunteer their time. I, as a licensed teacher of the blind students, can do so much and have, you know, lessons, but really having them connect with the blind mentors is a huge, major component of the Bell Academy. So I'm so thankful to our mentors and volunteers. So family members, if we can't get the kids to say, maybe you can share back about some of your summer experiences or what you felt about Bell.
Hi, I'm sister of Ahmed, and so I was the one who took the responsibility of him dropping and picking up, but then I had my classes, so I have my brother doing the job. It was challenging in a way that because of the traffic and all that, but my mom said we want him to go, so it was a lot of hours, but we made it happen. And Ahmed was sad when the program was ended. He was like, he don't want to go his actual school. He wanted to go study with Amy. Yeah, he was really mad when program ends. And he always talks a lot about the what they're doing there and things like that. And he also wanted those things to do at home. Thank you.
Yes, so my daughter is Naomi, and this was Naomi's first summer at Bell. She was so excited to go, and like Amy mentioned, meeting the mentors was such an important part of it. And she didn't have a cane before we started camp, and she was with her friends, and they all had their canes. And so learning from the people at the lighthouse about it prepared her in a way. Sorry, a little emo. Sorry. Because she has such a good time. She wants to go back. She was like, oh, I loved it. Even though she gave Amy a hard time. And I know Marilyn said, mentioned that too. Naomi was like, oh, I don't like Braille. She loves Braille. She practices all the time at home. So it was a great camp. Thank you very much.
I will say, coming out of the virtual Bell Academies and having some in-person virtual or in-person Bell Academies was really nice. We had some low numbers, but we hope to build that back up as more in-person events occur. But the participants this year were so imaginative, and I could just let them play together. And the way they included each other with varying degrees of vision and non-vision, it was a really fun experience to have such few kids, but to see them bond up and have a ton of fun. They did tell me earlier, because I tried to prep them, that they enjoyed our field trips. And taking the bus and the L and going to the park. And the park we went to had a lot of great playground equipment and climbing. Do you want to share now, Naomi? Okay. And a lot of climbing. And I think the freedom to go explore. And, you know, that doesn't always happen with parents. It might, but it doesn't always. And so to have just the full run of a playground with other kids. And they made their way. It was great. So I really appreciate the program and appreciate you guys going.
Thank you, Debbie Stein, Amy Lund, and the Bell families. Amy, thank you for these last 10 years of your service to our children. Yes, Kathy Randall. Can we get a mic to Kathy?
Glenn, let's see. There you go. Gotcha, thank you. I'm Kathy Randall, and I am so grateful to you parents and the kids and to Amy and Debbie and Denise and Marilyn and everybody. I work hard to raise money for Bell. And we're so grateful to the Naperville Noon Lions Club for their continuous support, particularly of Chicago Bell. Wow.
Yes. Do I have a bell
They're
ringer somewhere?
So grateful. And we want to continue this, and we're hunting for a continuous supporter for Springfield Bell. I haven't found that yet, but we've been lucky enough that we can use money from our various donors, and we're very grateful for all our various donors whose money has been used to help us to, be able to present the Springfield Bell as well. I wish we'd had these when I was a kid, you guys. Oh, man. Would have done anything to have had Bell when I was a child. Oh. You lucky, lucky kids. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
So, Glenn Moore, do we have a count for Pi Palooza? And do we get a door prize to adjourn?
So, our count's still the same.
Oh, 895? So, Adelmo is saved.
I'll donate 20.
Okay, so they said donate 20.
So
So they need another. So it was 105, so they need another $85. Everybody wanted to see Neil get a pie last year. What's up with you? Adelmo's so kind, that's what it is. Adelmo's just so kind. Yeah. All right, door prize.
Okay.
Oh, they're over there.
Our last door prize for this general session is going to be a candle donated by Vinny Savant and a $50 gift card.
Ooh.
Donated by ACEIT.
Oh, okay.
And the Oscar goes to... Okay, it goes to Marco.
Marco, sound man extraordinaire. And we are adjourned.